From the studios of WBAA Public Radio in West Lafayette, this is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue University President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski, and we appreciate you listening to the show this month. If ever you'd like to get a question on the program, you can email that to news@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Let me start with an off-the-wall but topical question. What was your favorite Christmas song growing up? What was the one that you always looked forward to hearing or singing with the family growing up? Is there one that sticks out?
Oh, my. Could be Joy to the World, which was usually the last one at Christmas Eve service. But any one of them can choke me up even to this day. Away in a Manger gets me every time. Interesting question. No, I love all the carols that we learned at church and at home. And my folks were in the church choir forever. So singing was, whether it was that time of year or some other, was always pretty big in our house. But I'm a traditionalist, and I love them all.
Let me ask you another sort of seasonal-related question, one that was just brought to me. Someone said, what happens on campus if, due to snow and ice, roads crack? And I thought, well, I know a couple of years ago the city of West Lafayette annexed the campus, and so I wondered, are they responsible for any sorts of problems that may crop up with how the roads buckle during the cold and the freeze and thaw cycles?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I guess that's the answer. Let's hope it doesn't reach that point. But I guess we do have some, as you and I sit here, we have some pretty unusually frigid temperatures forecast. So that's hard on, I know from my previous life, that's really hard on road surfaces.
Yeah. And so that's not something that you guys would have to budget for then, something that they would take care of theoretically?
Right.
Okay. I wanted to get to a question that's come in from a listener. This is from John, who says he streams our program on the internet from his home in Bloomington each month. And John writes, is the Big Ten Network considering any sort of pay-per-view options for alums or fans that do not subscribe to cable or satellite TV? He says it seems unfortunate to lock out supporters who have cut the cord, will cut the cord, or don't watch much television to begin with. And this would seem to be a way that Purdue, for instance, could do outreach to fans or alums who live outside of the bounds of the Big Ten. Anything like this that you've heard of?
Fascinating question, and thanks, John. So I don't know the answer, but now I'm going to go try to find out now. I will say this, first of all, it's going to become more and more important because, like apparently John, lots of Americans are moving away from cable. So the Big Ten Network has been a spectacular success, I think, beyond most people's expectations, in large part because it's available almost everywhere. The Big Ten is different from the other conferences in that we have big schools, and some of them do too, but our alums, Purdue, IU, Ohio State, Penn State, our alums are more geographically dispersed than, for instance, the Southeast Conference. Big schools, but most of their alums still live somewhere in the that part of the country. And so part of the foresight and really genius of the people who put the Big Ten Network together was to realize that the cable stations in New York and L.A. and Boston and big markets would all want and have to take it because of the interest in their areas. Now, with several hundred thousand people leaving ESPN, for instance, and many leaving cable altogether on a regular basis, that's a monthly number, by the way, I'm sure they're thinking about it. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if those very bright people haven't thought about some mechanism for allowing streamers to access it even if they're not on cable anymore. So I don't know the answer. I wish I did, but I'm going to inquire.
It would make a difference, it would seem, to your athletic programs as well. And we should say most, if not all, of the athletic programs in the conferences that have large networks devoted to those conferences are heavily subsidized these days by the dollars coming in. And at Purdue, increasingly so, as the Big Ten Network funnels more and more money back to the member institutions.
That's correct. Now, it's just a guess, but there may well be provisions in the network's contracts with cable operators that say we won't compete with you by offering it a la carte in your subscription area. I don't know, but it could well be that there are obstacles like that.
This is Indiana Public Broadcasting's Monthly Conversation with Mitch Daniels. You can send your questions via email to news@wbaa.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, just a couple of days before you and I taped this, you and Indiana University President Michael McRobbie were on stage together at Indiana University, Purdue University, Fort Wayne, talking about the proposed changes to that campus. And honestly, I watched the webcast and you were met with a somewhat hostile crowd. There were a number of people who were really not happy with what was going on. Faculty and staff both stood up to ask questions that were pointed at times of both you and President McRobbie. What did you make of the reaction you got?
Well, there's obviously the people who are most concerned about any subject like that are more likely to show up, and usually they're louder and more persistent than others, and that's their right. There were about eight people standing in the back. This is a campus with 10,000 students. But there was still, there were some good questions asked. And all we can say is what we did there, that this, first of all, multiple committees, none of them started by Purdue University or IU. Some started in the region, in the community. Some by the Indiana General Assembly have looked at the situation there, and all have started from the standpoint that something has to change, because IPFW has been losing enrollment and consequently losing dollars. The state has made some special provisions to subsidize them a little extra in the last two or three years, but it's pretty clear that something new was called for. And so the state legislative study committee recommended essentially what was announced yesterday or the 2 days ago, and or what was discussed. And now the job is to try to make that work as well as we can. I pointed out that this has been a long, long discussion. There were many points at which I thought it either wouldn't or maybe shouldn't lead to any fundamental change in governance.
What caused you at those various times to think maybe this shouldn't happen?
Didn't want to give up some programs we were very proud of. Nursing being, you know, the Purdue nursing program there is very strong. It's growing. There's a real need, obviously, for more nurses and other medical professionals. And so that program and a couple other health sciences programs, we have to now divest the IU. So that was something we're doing very reluctantly.
Can you tell me about the negotiation process that led to each school having to sort of give over to the other school some things that they had previously been in charge of?
Just that it was long and lots of stops and starts, there were more, as I say, places along the way where I thought, well, that's the last we'll hear of that. It just didn't seem like the issues could be resolved. But always the goal of everybody involved has been, how can we produce a better positioned university to serve that community and its region in the years ahead? And IU has what I have to admit was a very persuasive vision, let's call it, of an integrated health sciences program there. And that has lots of promise. We do know that that's a fast-growing, and it's going to be a faster-growing economic sector, aging society and all that. So there's a logic to that. Even though it required us to do something we'd rather not with three programs, in the interest of the area and the university we had to agree with. And so now the question is, all right, if we're to take full leadership for the rest of the programs, how do those need to be reshaped? What new offerings might attract new students and meet employer needs and civic needs and so forth up there? So
one point of agreement on seemingly all sides of this has been that enrollment is not where people want it to be. Is there an argument to be made that if you're an incoming, soon-to-be freshman and you see all of this talk about a campus that appears to be somewhat in flux, that that could have at least a short-term deleterious impact on the campus enrollment? Because if you were to look at IPFW versus, say, Ball State, if you're in the eastern or northeastern part of the state, one of those universities probably looks a little more stable than the other at the moment.
Yeah, well, they've been losing students to, I don't know about Ball State, but there are other schools right up there that are growing and that are very close. Trine is one of those. I think Goshen is one of those. I mean, there's some schools that are doing pretty well and attracting students who might otherwise come to that campus. Well, we don't know. I will say that the first job is to stop the erosion that's happening already. So let's hope it that doesn't accelerate. Meanwhile, I do think the IU a part of this is, as I said, highly promising. Those disciplines have been growing, whether they were ours or the ones IU was already offering. So I think that part's probably going to be pretty stable. I think we have the larger challenge. And since none of this takes effect for a year and a half, I do think we all have to be cautious and vigilant in this interim period. And the sooner we can get the shape of the new, whatever we call it, campus visible to all, I think the better. You know, it's important to note all the current students will be allowed with a lengthy period, grace period, runs out to 2021, I guess, to complete their degrees just exactly as they contemplated. So there'll be no disruption of those who have entered before all this was announced.
And we should say what you're talking about is some students have said that they particularly want either the IU name or the Purdue name on their diplomas. And in some cases, the history of IPFW is that students have gotten to choose in some cases, and they want to retain that one way or the other. If you're looking at the changeover of some of these programs, you mentioned the nursing program going over to IU. The other interesting side of that was Purdue getting a music program back from IU, which of course has the Jacobs School of Music, very well regarded among music schools nationwide. And legend has it, although I've not been able to confirm this, and by golly, I've tried, that John Purdue, when he handed over the deed to the land here, said, "And there will never be a music major so long as I'm giving you this land." And I don't know if that's true, but it sure is repeated often enough on this campus. Is it a little weird that you guys got back a music program when clearly IU has the bigger music infrastructure?
There are a lot of ironies in this, and it's very interesting. First of all, that is not an IU music program. The Jacobs School is maybe the finest in the world. It's certainly one of the finest. It's a real a gem, I think we all know. But IU's been very careful always to say that music program at Fort Wayne is not connected to the Jacobs School or to IU. It is a separate, it's the IPFW music program. And by the way, it's pretty good. I know that some of their musicians appeared at Carnegie Hall last fall and were selected to do that. So I'm actually kind of excited about our trying to be its sponsor and supporter. As you know, Stan, but a lot of folks don't, we don't have a music school. Don't know whether John Purdue forbade it or not. But it was recognized by one of our great builders of the engineering college, President Elliott, that music and the arts are indispensable part of a complete education and maybe especially valuable to those who are pursuing technical disciplines. And so we don't have a music school, but we have one of the most musical campuses anywhere. Elliott Hall's almost as big as Radio City Music Hall, one of the biggest in the country. Yeah, you know about all the programming that's put on around here. Our instrumentalists alone are number over 900. There are far more of them than all our athletes put together. I like to tell people that because they don't it surprises them.
I often joke that on Thursday and Friday afternoons, people who don't know, we record this show in the basement of the Elliott Hall of Music. And on Thursday and Friday afternoons during football season, as we're trying to do our afternoon newscast, it's like Name That Tune down the hall trying to figure out what's going to be played at halftime at the football game that Saturday.
Yeah. No, there's a very well-established correspondence or correlation between mathematics and science and disciplines like engineering and music. 70% of the musicians in our band are studying engineering, science, mathematics, one of the STEM disciplines. They very much go together. So I at first blush, I agree with you. It seems surprising or anomalous. But actually, there's every reason for Purdue to welcome a very fine music school into our family and for that the people at that school there to feel that they are right at home in a place like Purdue Fort Wayne or IPFW.
Let's talk about the name for a second. Senate President Pro Tem Long was part of the discussion the other day, and he talked a little bit about trying to find creative ways to keep the IPFW brand alive, but also perhaps align it with either of the other two universities. Do you have thoughts about how you'd like to see that happen and whether that matters to the Purdue brand writ large?
Ultimately, it's a decision for our trustees. I'll say, and I did the other day, I personally hope that something can be identified on that campus or in that community that people favor. That's what I'm likely to be for. I don't have a firm view. David Long was, I think, making the point that you could preserve the pre-existing name, IPFW, at least in referring to the campus, even though there might be IU will have a name for its health sciences complex, and there may be some other name for the part that we lead. I personally am eager to hear what thoughts there are over there, and I'm going to lean to what people in the area would like. But it's finally our trustees have to make a decision because we're talking about one that I hope is the last name change up there.
I was thinking about the efficiencies or perhaps lack thereof that come from this. And one of the things you've tried to do to help finance the tuition freeze and try to streamline the West Lafayette campus a little bit is not have so much either duplication of effort and position or letting positions go if they weren't needed. I wonder if splitting off a couple of things at IPFW might lead to some additional duplication of effort, particularly among support staff who might do the same thing for one entity or the other. Do you see that happening?
It's a good question, but I don't see it happening. And that's really one of the things that the long negotiation with IU finally worked out. They will basically buy administrative services. They'll rent space. And they'll buy classes from the Purdue entity. So there'll be no duplication. There'll be I don't know if there'll be any reduction, but you'll simply have the same staff resources that you do now. And also, because nurses need to take English. I hope nurses will study some history or other things while they're there. And that'll all have to be purchased from the resulting Purdue entity. And actually, that's one way in which the Purdue entity there will recoup what otherwise would be a big loss of tuition as nursing moves over and imaging moves over and so forth.
I saw a story also, just one last piece on this, that the headline indicated that IPFW faculty and staff are going to have to clean their own offices as a result of some reduction in custodial staffing. Is that at all true?
I don't know. If so, remember that we try to operate – I use a little different, but we try to operate on a basis of autonomy at what are now our two regional campuses, having consolidated the Northwest University into one administration. But, you know, a school that's losing $4 to $5 million a year is, I'm sure, having to do some things to try to economize. But if so, it has nothing to do with this change of governance. It has to do with the underlying struggles that they've had over there that we now have to take a lead in trying to improve.
This is Indiana Public Broadcasting's Monthly Conversation with Purdue University President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. You can email questions for this program to news at WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, we talked a little bit about some of the possibilities of the reactions to what happened in the election, and I wanted to address the feedback you got about the addressing of the white nationalist posters that showed up on campus. You initially said you wanted to stay out of the fray. Eventually, you issued a short statement to the university community. I wondered what made you finally send that statement out. What caused you to think it was the right thing to do?
Well, let's get it straight here. I immediately put out a statement condemning the apparent underlying agenda of the sponsoring group. I said I didn't want to play into their hands by drawing attention to what I know is a minuscule, a little fringe operation. That's exactly what they're hoping for. But some folks wanted something stronger, so we said something stronger the next day, but we criticized them on two consecutive days. You know, Stan, I got to tell you, you asked about feedback. I'm answering letters and emails every day now from people who were pleased that we kept some sense, as they saw it, of proportion about this and didn't, as they see it, overreact. And I do think it's important to note that these few posters on their face didn't say anything that I had that one, I think, can attack. They said, "We have a right to exist." That's a fairly innocuous statement. I don't know that anyone's arguing the contrary. You know, someone doesn't have a right to exist. And so, you know, imagine that some group, that one, or say a pro-ISIS group, put up some cardboard posters here, and they said, "Season's greetings." How strongly should we condemn them when they haven't done anything and they haven't even yet said anything hateful? So,
do you worry at all about I know you and I have talked a lot on this program about trying to welcome free speech on the campus, but do you worry at all about at what point you open the door to saying something less innocuous than season's greetings?
Look, I just think this happened 3 days after an act of hate. Someone tried to murder a lot of students and faculty and staff at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
I worry about that sort of thing all the time. Short of that, there are statements that are hateful. And when we've heard those or seen those on our campus, we don't hesitate. I do think we have to keep some of our adjectives in reserve for things, let's say, even more troublesome than a few cardboard posters that on their face don't say anything. You know, next time maybe they will, and you'll hear something stronger. But as I say, I'd like to keep number one, I would like not to give people who seem this hate-filled an audience and inflate their importance beyond what it really is. And secondly, I hope not, but there very well may be occasions when we have even worse things to respond to.
It seems clear that at least some portion of the campus wanted a stronger response, a more strongly worded response.
Yeah. So I tried something a little stronger, and I wanted, for instance, the chair of the Senate Faculty Diversity Committee applauded the second statement. So maybe refining it and dialing it up a little was was best. You know, we everybody's got their own and is entitled to their own sense of the balance and the degree of severity that with which someone addresses these issues. But as I said, I would love to think that's the worst instance from any direction of speech or even conduct that we have to react to around here, but we'll be lucky if that's the case.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, based on this most recent reaction from students and staff and faculty on the campus, does that change the way that you would respond to them, to those people whom you serve on a daily basis?
No, I simply have to make the most balanced judgment I can on behalf of 57,000 people on this campus. And we respect and we promote and protect the ability of, in the case of the demonstration, 85 or 90 people to state their point of view, or others to, you know, sign letters to that effect. But we have to, I think, maintain some sense of proportionality to this. And as I say, reserve our most aggressive language and, if it comes to it, actions for events that it's easy to imagine statements, first of all, and even conduct that will call for something much more emphatic than this one did.
In just our last minute or so, let me ask you to look forward into 2017 a little bit. Is there something, a goal or a challenge that's on your radar heading into 2017 that maybe wasn't on your radar in 2016, something that you're going to have to devote some more effort to that maybe you and I will wind up talking about on this program in the coming 12 months that's come up as something you want to address?
Great question. Good one for me to reflect on, and I'm going to actually have a few days to reflect here as the season arrives. I guess I'll just say, as people are in a variety of contexts, we had an unusual and a surprising election outcome. There's a lot of uncertainty around that, and it might lead to changes in the higher ed environment for good or ill, I guess. I'll be thinking a little about that, what might change because of that, just as people in other pursuits will. But I do believe that Purdue's had a good year in 2016. I do believe that our students, our faculty, have done a great job. They've represented us well. My thought for 2017 is let's hope we can equal the results of this year, and let's try to even surpass them.
All right. Well, Mr. President, thanks as always for your time. Happy holidays to you and your family, and we look forward to doing this again in 2017.
A Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, season's greetings to all your listeners, and thanks for these opportunities, Stan.
This has been Indiana Public Broadcasting's Monthly Conversation with Mitch Daniels. Remember, you can find all these programs archived at WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Major support for the Monthly Conversation with Mitch Daniels comes from Gaylor Electric. Gaylor provides electrical services from pre-construction design through project completion and a 24/7 service department. Information at gaylor.com. Support also comes from Purdue University Press, publishing global scholarship and popular regional work since 1960 and featuring Calculated Risk, The Supersonic Life and Times of Gus Grissom. More at thepress.purdue.edu.